Techno WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Troubleshooting WebSphere Application Server Start-Stop Issues. Today's presenters are Ganesan Kawupaya and Kumaran Nathan. Ganesan has 9 years of WebSphere application server customer support experience in multiple versions from version 3.5 to version 7. He is specialized in system management, security, and scripting administration. Kumaran has more than 8 years of WebSphere application server customer support and testing experience in multiple versions from version 5 to version 7. His areas of specialization include install, application management, and system management. At this time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Ganesan.
Thank you, Joseph. Welcome, everyone. My name is Ganesan Kawupaya, and today's presentation, we are going to focus on troubleshooting of application server stop and stop, server stop and start issue. We all know that very important thing in WebSphere application server is to make the server open for e-business. That's a famous message that everyone be aware of that. But to get that message, sometimes we go through a lot of problems and how to start the server and stop the server. So I hope this presentation will give some clear picture and the technology anatomy involved in server stop and start issue. Moving on to slide number 2. Today's agenda, we'll go through the overview of server stop options, followed by anatomy of server start. Later, we introduce to the server logs, app server logs, and finally, we'll have the important troubleshooting session, followed by question and answers. Moving on to slide number 3, overview of server start and stop option. Most of you aware of this, how to start the server, how to stop the server. It looks very simple, but when we run into any kind of problem, then that become a major issue for like any production issue or something like that. So understanding how to start the server and stop the server, even though everybody is aware of that, but to get to know the more detail is very important. Moving on to slide number 4. We have multiple options to start and stop the server. At this point, when I say server, I'm focusing on the application server JVM, which is responsible for hosting the application. For example, server 1. Sometimes you may get confused with the name application server. You may refer to Node Agent or a DMGR. But in slide number 4, I'm going to discuss about the app server JVM. We have multiple options to start the server. And if you are using a command line, you can start the server from the profile root. For example, like you have in a one machine, you may have multiple profiles. So you go to the particular profile name, for example, app server 1. Then from the bin directory of that app server 1, you can start the server by issuing start server space the server name. Since we are doing this start from the profile home, we no need to pass the profile name. By default, it's going to start the whatever the server name that we put in from the same profile. Sometime, you may have some script to run from the application server install root. So in that case, you need to pass the profile name. Start server with the minus profile name, then whatever the profile name followed by the server name. So because it is this install root is very common for all the profiles, and you may have multiple profiles in that particular machine, so to start the server from this location, you need to give the profile name. But if you are starting from the earlier case, if you are starting from the profile bin itself, there is no need to pass that profile name option. It is optional. And other way to start the server is, from Windows, you can go to the Start menu, Start Programs, and select the application server version, and from there you can start the server. And in Windows, sometime our customer, they configure to start the server using Windows Service or to avail like different options from the Windows Service. I want to make sure that when you use the Windows Service option to start the server, you can set either to start automatically or manual start. When you set the server start to automatic, so it's going to start the server whenever you reboot the operating system. Whenever you restart the machine, it's going to start the server automatically. If you have configured Windows Service with auto start option, you need to make sure that server does not have any dependencies on other application server. Most of the case that I noticed in this Windows Service, there's one server trying to come up, but it may have some dependencies with the other server. The other server is not yet started, so we run into problem with this option. So whenever you are using a Windows Service automatic start option, please make sure that server is not having any dependencies. If you have dependencies, then my recommendation is use WSAdmin script or other method so you can take over the control of starting the each app server and start one app server and get the complete message, open for e-business message, then start the other server. There is one thing I want to add. And moving on to slide number 5. We are on slide number five. You may wonder, like, when in a deployment manager environment, what is the startup order? Do we need to start the deployment manager first, node agent first, or the app server first? Actually, like, there is no strict rule to saying that you need to start the deployment manager first, no node agent, then app server. There is no such a rule. But the best practice is start the deployment manager and the node agent and then the app server. But definitely to start the app server, like server one, you need to have a node agent running. So that is important. But there are options. You can overlook this. You can start the app server without node agent. We are not going into that detail. But the best practice, start the deployment manager and start the node agent, then start the app server. In this slide, we are going to discuss about how to start the deployment manager and the node agent. Like server, app server JVM, the deployment manager and the node agent can be started from the command line. For a deployment manager, the only option is you need to start from the command line. So it can be, you go to that particular profile, the deployment manager profile, and give the profile name, and then say that start the DMGR. That's one way. Otherwise, straight away you can go to that deployment manager profile command line bin directory, then you can type start manager. So it's going to start the deployment manager. And once the deployment manager is started, then you can go to that node agent profile, and from that bin directory, you can say start node, and it's going to start the node. But the node is again a one JVM. It is, the server name is going to be node agent process. So you can say start server, and the server name is node agent. So you can do that also. And so the deployment manager, you need to start always from the command line. And the node agent, yes, you need to start always from the command line. So we don't have any other option to start this because these two are like a primary JVM, so you need to go from the command line. And there is another option. You can do it from the console. For a node agent, but from the console, what you can do is you can restart the running node agent, but you cannot stop node agent. If the node agent is already running, then from the console, you can say restart that particular node agent. And yes, always you can stop the node agent from the console. And same like application server that we discussed in previous slide, always you can add node agent or a deployment manager into the Windows service or in the Unix tab. You can add this, and you can control saying that whenever the operating system rebooted, you can make this node agent and the DMZR to start automatically. So that is the one option with Windows service. Since the node agent and the deployment manager, they don't have any dependencies, and so you can have auto start enabled with the Windows service. So the best practice is, if you want to have a Windows service for a WebSphere application server, my recommendation is you can have a deployment manager as auto start and the node agent as auto start. For application server, like server 1 and the real JVM, you can have a control by using a script or start the servers from the console. So by this way, if there is any database dependencies or other resources dependencies, then you make sure that you start one server at a time and make sure it opens for e-business. So one more thing I want to point out at this slide. If there is a security is enabled and you want to start the deployment manager using an auto start like Windows service, make sure that LDAP server, your LDAP server is already available and it is working okay and you are able to do that and there is no network problem. Because like most of the time, deployment manager, if there is LDAP server is down, then you may run into some problem. So we have option to take care of this, but the best practice is make sure that all the other resources, database and the LDAP server is already available before starting deployment manager. That's the best practice. Now, moving on to slide number 6. We are going to look into detail about the anatomy of server start. This I want to give more importance to this because once you know how the server is started or what is the logic behind that, then you'll have a good idea whenever you are collecting the traces or when something is not working, this will be very helpful. Moving on to slide number 7. What happens when a server is started? So we know that to start the server, we go to the command line and we say start server space server 1. That's what we do. In that process, actually like two JVM involved in this process. As soon as you type start server server 1, the first JVM is launched. That is a system management, WebSphere system management launch utility. It is not a real JVM for that server. It is a first JVM. It is a launch utility. What it does is, it is going to read that particular server, server.xml file, and the server index.xml file, and bootstrap classes. So it's going to read the basic configuration to fire that next JVM. So it reads all this configuration file. Then from that JVM, there is another JVM is launched. So that second JVM is the actual server process for that server you are trying to start. This is very important. I noticed like a couple of cases when you have a server hung situation, instead of taking the Java core from the second JVM, sometimes we see that Java core taken from the launch utility before launching the real JVM, then we don't have any data to work on that. So when you do the server start, always note that two JVMs involved. First one is a launch utility. Second one is the actual JVM. The second JVM actually initializes the web container and the security components and the application. But there is one difference. This is when you start the server from the command line. But if you start the server, app server from the console or using a WSAdmin script, this concept is going to be different. There, we do the direct mbean call. We call the server mbean from using deployment manager and the node agent connection. We call that server mbean, get hold of that, then we issue the start command on that. So in that case, you don't see that two JVM. It's going to be one JVM. these two JVM anatomy is only when you do the start from the command line. So moving on to slide number 8. So what happens when we stop the server? The stop server, like we so far we discussed about the server start, and the stop server also it follows the same syntax. Like if you want to stop the server, go to that profile home and do the stop server name. If you can do it from that WebSphere install root also. So when you do the stop server from the command line, it creates a new JVM and it sends the signal to the server asking to shut down. See, if you notice that the command prompt, it never returns until the server is completely stopped. So if you want to run this process in the background, what you can do is you can use a no wait option. The example is stop server, the server name followed by no wait. So in that case, you get the command from back, and the background, it is trying to stop the server. Always, user ID and password is needed to stop the server if you have WebSphere security is enabled. This is very important because for starting the server, we don't need user ID and password. But to stop the server, any JVM, we need to provide user ID and password. That is very important. Unless otherwise, you configure the property files with the user ID and password, you need to send this from the command line, minus user ID and password option. Like other server, like start option, you can do the stop from the console. Also, you can use the WSAdmin also. If you want to have stop multiple server and then restart the server and install the application, if you have any script doing all these operations in one script, make sure that you get the complete message, server stop completed, before going to issue the next start. Otherwise, you may run into some port conflict issue. And moving on to slide number 9. Here I'm going to introduce to the basic server-side logs. We all aware of this log, but I want to go through this before you go to the troubleshooting session. Moving on to slide number 10. We all know that the system out log is a very important, and it monitors the health of the running JVM. So all the messages logged in, and by default, without enabling any special traces, basic information is logged into the system out log. And there is a first place that for any troubleshooting, we want to look into the result. We want to start from that. And these are called JVM logs, system out log and system error log, JVM logs. So we start from the system out log, look for some messages. Then to get the complete stack trace, we go to the system error logs. So that's the way the JVM log is very important in troubleshooting. Also, the native standard error and native standard out log available, they are called the process logs. Native code and any JVM-related information directly goes into this log file. So native standard error and native standard out, you may see like some native code and Java-related issue, all this information dumped into these two files. So we start from the system out log, and then we go to the system error log to see is there any special stack traces available. You may notice that the stop server log and the start server log, and these two log files created only if you start the server from the command line. If you start the server from the console, you may not see that stop server or a start server log in the logs directory. And there is another log file almost we use like often. It is known as a first failure data capture. From the end user point, the end user no need to worry about what is in the FFDC logs. You may see some exception or some messages like in the FFDC log. You can ignore that unless otherwise you really have some issues, some exception in the system out log, or you notice some real-time problem with the application server. The FFDC log is only for a debug purpose for a support engineers, And we try to capture the information during the failure, that first failure, and we save all this information in this particular FFDC logs directory. So unless otherwise there is a problem noticed from the system out log or a system error log, end user point, like then you need to worry about the exception or a message that we put in an FFDC log. It is always good to review that, but that is the last one that we review for a debugging. And so we introduced to the server logs and how the server start and these stuff. Now, moving on to slide number 11, troubleshooting. At this point, I want to turn the presentation to Kumaran. He's a subject matter expert in this area. And so he will walk you through the troubleshooting. Kumaran?
Thanks, Ken. Hello, everyone. This is Kumaran Nathan. I'll be taking over the presentation from here on. Let's talk about troubleshooting the WebSphere application server start and stop. Let's move on to slide number 12. Okay, before even we proceed further on the troubleshooting, as Ken mentioned already, all the logs files will be available under the profile root log / server name directory. So for any server, it can be deployment manager, it can be node agent, or it can be an application server. So all the servers will have the log folder by default. That's the default location. And if you want to change, you can change it. But the default location will be your profile root / log / server name directory. So under the directory, we always have the standard files like system out, system error, native std out, native std error files. So before even you have an issue with your server start, it can be from your console or it can be from your Windows services or you are starting it from the command line. So your server failed to start. Where do I see or how do I start debugging the problem? So always the very first thing you should remember is come to the command prompt and try to start the server. It may be always you may have a script to start it. It could be a WSAdmin script or you may have your own script or it could be your Windows service or you do it from the console. If your server is not coming up, you don't see the server is started in the console, whatever it is, or not in the Windows services, come to the command prompt. That is a very basic first thing to do. Come to the command prompt and say start server server 1 or start server your server name. So you may see some exception in the command prompt there. So go to the logs folder to your profile root / log / server name folder and look for the very first file called systemout.log file. So if the systemout.log file is there, or if it is updated with the current timestamp, go to the end of the file, actually look for the current timestamp, the time that you started the server. First thing you have to look is there any open for e-business message? You go to the bottom of the file and see if there is any open for e-business message. So if you see open for e-business message, it means the server is started pretty much, but that's not the 100%. I'll tell you why. But pretty much that's how you need to start with. So if you see open for e-business, then we are good to go, the server is started. Sometimes it may say server open for e-business with some warning messages. You can, pretty much it may be from your application, some warning message or some error message or some information message. So you have to walk through or go through that log and see if there is anything you can fix or you can skip. If there is no e-business message, then go through the logs from the time you started the server. It will start with start display some message, and you can just go through the log from the first line and see. I would say probably the better thing is to take a backup of the old system order log file, put it somewhere else, and start a new one. So it will be easier. So you know for sure the system out is created or not, or how to work, go through the file. So if there is no exception and no open for e-business, so you don't see any exception in the logs and there is no open for e-business, but you see all your applications are running and all those stuff. So it will not happen all the time. It's very rare cases. There is something called the startup trace specification or message filter level attributes in the server.xml file. if that is set to none, or if it is set to specific to information, or if it is set to skip the audit messages, you may not see the no open for e-business, because open for e-business is the audit message. If the message filter level and or the trace specification level in the server.xml file, for some reason, if you modify it, you may not see the message. But usually, we should not see this problem. Unless you modify it, you may see the difference. And sometimes you may see some variable.xml file, which close.xml file, or some file not found exceptions. But usually, you won't see this in system out. Pretty much, you may see that in start server log file. These exceptions can be ignored. We have been trying to. Usually, you see it with minus trace option. I will talk about it later. As Ken mentioned already, most of the warning message that dumps in the system out for the FFDC can be ignored, because we try to capture as much as warning messages into the FFDC logs. So unless you see any specific problem with your application or something abnormal, don't bother about the FFDC messages. So the very first thing is to look for system.log file and look for any exception in the system.log file. Let's move on to the next slide. So what if there is no system out log is created? So as I said, the first thing is to go to the log folder, take backup of everything under the log/server name folder, and start fresh if the server is not starting. So in that way, you know what are the files are getting created and what is not getting created. If the system out is created, you follow the previous step, like look for the log exception and all the information. And if there is no system out or log file itself created in the logs folder, what I'm supposed to do? Let's move on to next slide. Okay, so there is no system out or log file is created now. What are the files I should start looking into it? Look for anything in the system error or system out or log file. If there are any entries in the system out or system error, it may be related to your JVM. Maybe something you set it up in the JVM class path or generic JVM argument, or you have something weird in the classes folder. Those things could cause this problem. The entry in this, usually if you open the server.xml file of the server, it will be under your profile root config cell name, node name, /server/server name folder. If you open the server.xml file, if you go to the bottom of the file, you will see the generic JVM argument, or you may see class path or something like that. So any one of that is really causing the problem. If you don't see the system out is created, only the native STD out or STD error file is created. Open that file, and you may see some native file is not getting loaded, or some weird runtime exception, or something like that. So you know for sure there is something wrong with your JVM setting there. And if you don't see any native STD error, native STD out, and there is no system out generated, nothing in native STD out, native STD error, what I'm supposed to do, then do the start server, /server1, or whatever the server name with minus trace option. That would give us some clue. It's not that we are going to figure out the root cause of the problem, but definitely that will give more information on what is going on. As we discussed earlier in the presentation, there are two JVM involved during the server start. One is your launcher JVM, one is the actual JVM. So the actual JVM will dump everything into the system out. The launcher JVM will put the information in the start server.log file. So now we know the system out is not created. It means the JVM itself is not started, the actual JVM. So there may be something wrong in the launcher. So if you give start server name with minus trace option, it will give you more information in the start server log. So review the start server and look for any specific information. And usually it would cause by some non-root issues or some permission issues or corruption in some of the files. Those are the basic reasons why there is nothing else is created, only the start server. If you look at the file, sometimes you may see server index file, some parse index, or some index array out of bound exception, or some process launch exception, something like that. So either the process launch would be your permission issue. If you see something like SACS parser exception or something like that, it means either your server.xml file or serverindex.xml file or your variable.xml file or any one of these three is corrupted, actually. Sometimes it may not clearly say which file it is, but pretty much any one of these three files would have been corrupted. Let's move on to next slide, 15. Okay, what happens, like, we don't have a system out, we don't have a native STD out, and there is nothing in start server log also. And even with minus trace option, it did not give you much information what I'm supposed to do. So we know for sure there is something wrong in the launcher itself. That's why you don't have any other information in any other log files. So how can I debug the server launcher, which is your start server? As I said already, always, if there are any issues, even from the console, Windows services, or from the WSAdmin to start or stop a server, always come to the command prompt, and the debugging will be easier, and resolution will be quicker. Let's move on to next slide, 16. So how do we debug the server launcher? Server launcher is nothing but your start server. That's your server launcher. So start server space your server name with give minus script option. By default, it creates the server name dot launcher.sh or dot bag file, or you can pass the script name. For example, server name space server one space minus script space launch server.sh or launch server.bat. Why I should do it? If you do it, we are entirely going to skip the launcher here. We'll remove the launcher out of the picture, and we'll be directly invoking the JVM. There won't be two JVM involved. There will be only one JVM involved here. We are directly kicking off the JVM. And what it does, it goes to your server.xml file, read all the information, server index, read all the information, put all together, wrap it up, keep it in the script file. All you need to do is just launch the script after that. Say, after you create the script, say launch server dot sh or launch server dot back. So it directly kick off the actual JVM process. So it also reduces start time by not passing configuration files because it's already been passed and kept in a file. And if the JVM settings are changed, you may have to create the new launcher. The good advantage of using this minus script is the launcher is, if you don't see any information in any of the log files, and if you try to launch it from here, somehow they have to dump the information for the failure. So what happens if you say launch server, it goes, because you already have all the information there, and once you dump it, it's going to dump everything in your command prompt. So that will give us a clue what is causing the problem. Pretty much we should be able to figure out what is really causing the problem. So this is a very good, and I use this often, and we get a lot of PMRs, and most of the PMR would get solved by using this debugging launcher. Let's move on to next slide, on slide number 17. What happens when server start or stop hang? So let's move on to next slide, 18. So this is pretty much like the server start or stop, either if it hangs, most likely you may have system.log file, but nothing is written and the open for e-business is not generated. I mean, if you go to the bottom of the system out, you may not see the open for e-business. And it's pretty much like, as I said earlier, the message level filter or startup trace specification, it's very rare case that will be in the server.xml file. That one reason you may not see the open for e-business because it's the audit message. But if your server hangs, you may not see the open for e-business as well. It may get hang in the fifth line. Usually it will be like 20 to 40 lines. It depends on how many applications you have, how many containers running. It may be even 200 lines of system order log file. But it may get hung in between, any time in between like line 5 to line 100 or 200. So you just pass the system.log file first. Open it, go through each and every line, and look at the last line where it is sitting. I mean, why it is not moving. That's the very first thing you need to do. And if you see some DCS message or HA manager message, we have seen many issues in the past and fixed a lot of issues, and I would advise everyone to be in the latest level to avoid those issues. And sometimes it may try to load application that will be sitting there forever because the application might require a database connection. and it will go there, look for the database connection. Until it responds, will be sitting there. So it means your database or something wrong there, and you have to fix the database exception or database issue. Sometimes with the security enabled, it will go look for the LDAP and get authenticated and get all the information and then start all other containers. So unless it gets authenticated, it's not going to start all the components. So if you have issue with the LDAP, if LDAP itself hung or it's not running, you may see weird issues and the server may not be even starting. This is just I'm focusing only on system.log4. It's very rare you may see the same case with a launcher itself, start server launcher itself. But you may see that also, but that's very, very rare cases. So what I'm supposed to do, what may look like a hand, like you may see the deadlock, infinite loop, or resource issues like LDAP database, which we talked about, how to isolate the problem. So we have the MarkGather documents to dump the Java course. So you can use any of the Java course. And if you suspect something with your application which is not going to your database and not connecting, or there is something wrong with your application itself, you can disable the application startup so that the application won't be even running or won't be started during the server startup. So if the server starts without the application, it means there is something wrong with your application. You can disable it. We have given the link in the slide, so make use of it. And there is another good option called, there is another interesting way of the server going down abnormally, actually. This is nothing to do with during the server startup. You started the server, server is running fine, all of a sudden your server crashed, or all of a sudden something happened to your JVM. You don't know who stopped the server, but the server stopped by itself. So the best option, because we don't know how to dump the threads at that time, and you don't know when the server is going to go down. So there is a custom property called com IBM WS runtime dot dump shutdown custom property. If you put that in the JVM, it will dump the Java core or the thread dumps when there is any abnormal shutdown, or whenever the server shuts down, actually. Not during your stop server process, but whenever the server shuts down automatically. So it can be used on 6.1.0.11 or 6.0.2.23, and it's available on 7.0 onwards, actually. So you can use this link, another link, to dump the server shutdown, actually. I mean, to dump the thread dumps during the server shutdown. So you can do that during the server startup process. If the server is hung and you checked your LDAP, you checked your database, and nothing wrong anywhere, but server is still not coming up, it's in the system.log file, no open for e-business, nothing is moving, then you can collect the Java course. We have a must gathers, and there is a spell mistake or the typo. JVM TM is the trademark, so it became TM. So, and the second bullet is generated by a signal. You can use -3 if it is on your Unix system to generate the Java code. That's a very easiest thing to do. You say start server, server 1 or whatever server, there will be two Java JVM process. Make sure you are collecting it from the actual JVM process. That PID, you can find it out in the system.log file. Open the system.log file. The very first line or the second line, end of the line, will have the PID ID. So get the PID ID, say -3 of the PID ID, and do it every 2 minutes to collect at least 3 or 5 Java code. And you can review by yourself, or you can open a PMR and you can send it to us. Another thing is hung thread detection policy. We introduced a new thing in 6.0.19 onwards. And this is also nothing to do during the server start. This is after the server is started and running, and all of a sudden some SOAP thread is not running, or it's not responding, or some web container thread is not responding. We have a time limit, like timeout of 10 minutes. If the thread is not moving for more than 10 minutes, we will give a warning message in the system.log file. But if you have the custom property enabled to dump the thread, it will dump with the warning message as well. So it will be useful for you to debug the hung message, actually. Let's move on to slide 19. Yeah, these are the common issues we see often, and we get more PMRs. So I would like to just go through a few of the tips, like the everyday what we see in our lab and the PMRs that we receive more often. So common issues during the server side, if you have more servers, I've seen customers having 200 servers, 400 servers in one machines, and we see a lot of port conflicts, actually. Look for any port conflict. It's all in the system order logs. Pretty much, if you review each and every line in the system out, you should be able to resolve the problem by yourself, pretty much. And there may be, as I said, there may be some invalid or wrong argument in generic JVM argument. If that is the case, there won't be any system order log file. As I said earlier, look for the information in the native STD out or native STD error. And there are some cases there could be some missing or corrupted config files. It could be your server index or server index. In that case, there won't be any system out, there won't be any system error, and there won't be any native STD out and native STD error. And you may see the information only when you say start server with minus trace option, and this information will be dumped there. And there could be some permission issues. Usually, if you are running as non-root user, make sure you run one user per profile. That is the best standard practice so that you will not have any issues in future. And sometimes if you run your node agent as root user and app server as non-root user, the config temp information will get changed, will be worn by the user, root user, and you may see some permission issue in the system.log file. You have to go and change the permission in the config temp. And sometimes if you may not even see system out, and you may see the exception in the system start server.log file itself. Server hang, we already talked about it. It may be related to database or HA manager. This will be the case, I mean, LDAP database will be the most of the cases, actually. Like I would say 60-70% of the hang will be there. And other few things may be in our containers or HA manager. It's a new thing in 6.1 onwards. So, that may be also related. There could be some security-related exceptions. I mean, pretty much any WebSphere application server with the WebSphere application security enabled, you should see if it is the problem with the security, you should see the information in the system.log file. Maybe the user is not getting authenticated or it's wrong or something. And you can pretty much disable the security because if you think about just a deployment manager you are starting and sir, deployment manager itself is not coming up. Either you need to use, you cannot use console at that time because console will be running on the deployment manager. So either you need to use WSAdmin or you can open the server.xml file, sorry, server security.xml file, which will be under your config cell name folder. And in the very first line, there will be something called enabled equal to true. You can modify that to false. But before you do anything, make sure take a backup of the file. Since we talk about the backup, I just want to give you one good information and example. Before you make any changes or any big modification, try to take a backup of your deployment manager. As long as you have a backup of your deployment manager, even if you have lost all 10 of your nodes, 20 of your nodes, we should be able to bring it back again. Only one important file is your config folder. At least take a backup of the config folder. As long as you have a config folder, we should be able to bring back your system back up and running in a couple of hours. But it may require some manual work, but we should be able to bring your configuration back. And we do see some too many open file issues, like it could be related to file descriptor or ulimit. Usually, you may not see any issue in any of the log files. This we can figure out only with trace on the application server side. Like on the startup trace specification, instead of star equal to info, you need to give star equal to all. If you give that, it will give more information in the trace. We should be able to figure out that. And there will be some IO exception or AIO or something like that in the trace file, which may give us clue to increase the ulimit value. And there could be some issues with Windows service also. We have seen with Windows services, it may not start properly. Sometimes it may not, the request may not even come to the logs here in the Windows, so you may not see any logs. So look for some event logs, event viewer, all those stuff, and see if anything over there. Or we have some good must-gather document, which would also help you out to resolve the problem. Sometimes you may also see some class code or runtime exception, like DL file is not getting loaded, or no class not found exceptions, or not able to load this file, or whatever. to look for anything in the classes folder. We don't want you to keep anything in the classes folder. That is the main reason. We used to give the debug modules, and we'll ask customers to place it in the classes folder earlier on 5.0.5.1 releases. Now we kind of even removed it, and it's all about, like, use a shared library. If you want to use some third-party jar files or whatever, keep it in the shared library. So that's the best place to keep your third-party jars, not in your classes folder. And these are the common issues we see very often, actually. That's all we have for the common issues. Before we move on to next slide. Yeah, sometimes you even may see issues with space and memory allocation. Make sure you have enough heap size and all those stuff that you can find out. By default, it will be 256, the maximum heap size. So make sure you have that also. That's a default value unless you change it. If you change it, that will be there in server.xml file. You should be able to see that value. When all else fails, I mean, if everything else fails, nothing can be done, what I can do. Let's move on to next slide, 21. So collect the must gather. That's the only thing we can do. I mean, we talked about everything pretty much, like how we can debug the problem, the server stack. And this, for the stop also, it's kind of pretty much same because we don't see much issue with the stop. For the stop issues, either we see authentication exception because we need to pass a user ID and password in the command line. If you don't want to pass it, there is a property file, SOAP client props file. You can set your user ID and password there so that you don't have to enter every time in the command prompt. And other issues we see with the stop server is kind of a hang. Sometimes it may take a long time. It may not even return. So it will be pretty much related to your OS, or it could be related to something on the network level is going on, because it's all socket level calls, actually. So when you say stop server, it goes, look for the listener, who are all running, read the information, create a socket, and close it. So there could be some issues on the OS or network level, and other than that, we should not see much stop server issue. We may see the performance issue with the stop server. We may see the security issues with the stop server, and we may see some network issues with the stop server. So the concept is same for stop server. You don't have any launch stop or whatever. Only option is to stop server with minus trace option. So you collect the must gather, open a PMR, send it to us. We should be able to figure it out. Let's move on to next slide, slide 22. So additional WebSphere products. We do have, for more information, just go through this link. And this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcast, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentation as well. And developer works often in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new user up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for password advantage client to open, update, and view PMS online. And the My Notification link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. So let's move on to the next slide. So we talked about how to debug, and we talked about how to troubleshoot and how the server stack works. Now I would like to turn the presentation back to Joseph Lang. Joseph, back to you.
Thank you, Kenny-san and Kumran, for a great presentation. Point in time, friend, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And our first request is from Jibrel. Your line is open now.
Yes, hi. This is a question about the starting and stopping the servers. I have two servers, and they're both up and running. I can see them from the console. The status are green, but they're clustered. But on the cluster side, I see the cluster indicates a partial stop. How to fix that?
Can you tell me the version of the WebSphere application server?
I could tell you it's 6.0.2.25.
Okay.
On a deployment manager version 7.0.0.5.
Okay. usually, I mean, on 5051, we never had these kind of problems. I mean, not much. From starting 6.0 onwards, we introduced something called status cache. Before that, we send the notification every time to get the status of the app server. No more notification were going between the node agent, D manager, and the app server. So we put all this together now in a status cache and keep it in the deployment manager. And whenever there is a change, that will get refreshed. But there is, unfortunately, there is no way dynamically, manually we can refresh it. If that gets stuck or if anything wrong in the status cache, we always see this kind of problem. The easiest way is to recycle the deployment manager and see if that could solve your problem. That would refresh the status cache.
Okay, thank you. Quick follow-up
sure.
On to the stop and the startup server. From the command line, when I want to stop this server, I'm getting an error of the application server cannot be reached. It appears to be stopped. And I can stop and restart it from the console. But stopping it from the command line, there is an issue with that error. It appears to be stopped.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Even though when I do when I grep it, it's still up. It's running.
Yeah. Then probably the request somehow it's not reaching it. It's not able to open the connector or SOAP. I mean, it works a little differently from the console and from the command prompt. The console, it all uses the mbean call. Directly goes, calls the mbean to shut down the app server. So the node agent will issue it and then stops it. When it comes to the command line, it's all with the connectors, actually. It has to, as I said, like it has to open the sockets and look for the listener and then shut it down. So there could be, and also when you say stop server, it's a command line request. It will also try to use, if the security is enabled, it will try to load the key files from the etc folder. And I've seen some issues sometimes if the keys, if it is not matching with your etc folder and also what you have in your actual cell name folder. In the 7.0, it's kind of key.p12 and trust.p12. If that is not matching between the etc folder, sometimes that we may see it. Or it could be, sometimes it may be network. The best option would be to do minus trace option and get the trace file. And also look for any SSL exception in the stop server log file. And if it says it cannot be reached, it means it's not even able to create the socket there. So if you see it immediately, it may not be a network. I mean, it may be a network problem. It may not be a hung issue. But the best option would be to collect the trace, and you can open a PMR, and we should be able to figure it out.
And also, like I'd like to add to Kumaran, and when you do the stop server and you're getting not able to connect. Before going traces, maybe you may want to do stop server name, and give the port number of that particular server, the SOAP port.
Yeah, that didn't. I did that, and that didn't help.
Well, okay.
I even given it to the credentials, password, username, you name it. It's still
okay.
Still complains about server cannot be reached. It appears to be stopped, and this is only if you do it from the command line. If you do it from the console, you know, you're good to go. Right? So I think your colleague was right. This has to do with the dummy client JKS file.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not matching, and that's where I'm leaning to fix the problem.
Okay, yeah, okay. Then minus trace will help. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, star then one if you need your line open. Our next from Subhash, your line's open now.
Okay, this is Subhash. I just want to pose one question to you regarding too many files open error. In our previously, we have observed that Node Agent restarted one of the app servers, and the Node Agent was able to stop the server, but it couldn't bring up the server, and the server went into hung state, and that app server finally throwed in too many files open exception after 3-4 hours. So is it because of Node Agent not able to connect to that server, or how was that?
Yeah, actually, the your case is kind of a little the unique case, actually, I would say, because Node Agent will try to restart at least 3 times, and it will be pinging the app server. And if the app server goes to hung state, it should pretty much able to kill the process, or I mean stop the process and restart it. And there is an option where you can, even node agent can kill the app server if it can't stop it. That's called sick kill. It's a custom property. You can set it in that JVM. But in any of the cases, I mean, there is some loop or something going on in your case where it's opening more connections and not closing it at all. So we definitely need a trace in this case to see what is really going on. Usually it will try only 3 attempts by default. It goes, see the if there is any issue. And if it is that too, if you can figure out if it is a real hung state, it will issue the stop request to shut down the app server. If it can't stop, as I said, if you have the sick kill parameter, it will kill it and then start the app server. If it is for so many hours, if it is going on, I think the ping is still going on, even though if the app server is hung and it's not responding and the connections are not closed and the threads are all open, something like that. So we should be able to see with the tracing, the management tracing on the node agent should help us to figure out what is going on.
Okay, so should I enable trace? The problem is that this is not a recurring issue for us, and we just saw it once, and we don't know how to retrace the situation there.
Yeah, at least if you have logs on the day it happened, node agent log, app server log, and FFDC. This time FFDC would be much helpful so that there may be some information in it. If you have the logs on the day it happened, at least we may be able to see what was going on that day. So at least it would give us some clue. I mean, and also you can put the tracing, we can give some lightweight tracing, like COM, IBM.ws.management.nodeagent. So that is not going to affect any performance at all on your system. And you can put that on your node agent, at least on the node agent, to see what is really going on. And if you have those logs from the day it happened, we may be able to see a few things in it, actually. Other than that, this kind of issues, it's very, very difficult to debug and say, oh, this could have gone wrong, or without trace, it's going to be very difficult, but we can try our best to find something out of it from the existing logs.
Okay, sure, thanks.
Thanks.
I have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Fran. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.